From the land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. We'll hear an interview I did with Herman Bolero, the head of the Office of Research in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences, during this week's Farm Progress Show that took place in Decatur. And we'll talk about the weather forecast today, too. That with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible, all on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Oh, and this reminder, the markets are closed in observance of Labor Day on Monday and won't open again until Monday night.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
On this Friday afternoon, we're joined by Mike Zuzlow. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Good afternoon to you, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
Great to be with you, and happy Labor Day to you, Todd, and all the great listeners out there in the Will Radio land.
And the same to you. Let's talk about what's happened in the market. A big difference between this week and last week, isn't there?
Yeah, and it really does boil down to the cash market and what has happened since Hurricane Ida, which I think will be, in terms of the damage done to New Orleans and the infrastructure in New Orleans, is I think will be probably a record amount of damage in terms of dollar terms. Latest updates that I've seen from the Department of Homeland Security, City of New Orleans, is that power is going to be probably switched back on between the 4th and the 8th for most of the parishes that are hooked into where the grain terminals are. We are seeing some of the refiners try and get restarted this weekend from what I'm hearing, but still a substantial amount of shut-ins for the energy sector. And I think what I'm expecting, Todd, is to see the energy side and the electricity side come on first, and then the terminals will be able to get more active. One because of the power issue, one because of the infrastructure issue, and the other because of the river issue of getting it cleaned up. And, you know, for instance, there are literally power lines down and transmission towers in the river after Hurricane Ida, and those have to be cleared away before we can even start talking about moving barges again. So I think that 2 to 3 week window of getting kick-started again and having that port back opened up again is a valid amount. And I think that's what really did the damage to this week, because much like what Ida did to the current of the Mississippi River, the cash basis just went negative, gone all the way up to Morris, Illinois. And we saw 55, 60 cent hits in basis in one day. And that transferred out into places like Tuscola and other areas.
Yeah, so I know the thing that farmers will ask you, or at least I'm pretty certain about it, which is, does this mean, Ida, that is, that we put in an early fall low, and can we expect, ever the optimist, that farmers are higher prices as we harvest the crop?
I think it can, but I think we have to realize that this, unfortunately, is coming as the September went into delivery, and my expectation and analysis would have suggested that the futures in September needed to move up to the cash prices. Ida has stopped that dead in its tracks. We've seen China now. It seems conclusive after Friday's report from Reuters that they shut down or washed out of 5 cargoes of Ukrainian barley. So we don't have China buying corn. We don't even have them buying corn or barley from our biggest competitor. So we have to talk about early harvest. We have to talk about USDA's report. And we have to talk about funds that are very, very long right now. And so what I've been talking to clients about as we've approached the later part of this week is the idea that we have to get through these three things, and that if the corn market in particular is going to bottom and make a low, and we have that early harvest you're talking about, it's probably going to have to come from the dollar and the wheat and those macro fundamentals that essentially kind of led the futures lower before the cash market fell to pieces.
So early harvest, easy enough to understand, begins to put some pressure on the marketplace. Also, maybe producers might be able to, may have been able to get some pretty good bids early on. That still may be the case, depending on how their local basis is and whether ethanol plants and other end users locally need something. Next week, USDA on Friday will release the crop production report, and that will include an acreage update that's a month earlier than normally we would see it.
Yeah, this is the big thing, I think, that really makes me want to say, okay, this September report has got a lot of wild cards in it, because we're already thinking that the yield, especially in the soybeans, maybe could change and be a biased upward based upon these rain events that we've seen. Maybe the corn too, and we knew that we probably would face some demand jitters because of the way the marketing year for 2020 ended, with quite a bit of corn that has not been shipped out at this point, and how USDA handles that, and how they handled, quite frankly, the production numbers for ethanol the past 3 weeks in a row. I mean, it's just not been anything but kind of down 2 to 3% about every week. So you got to wonder if that's not going to play a role in it, as well, the issue with some of the feed and residual, with some of these weights lightening up. So these two things were already a question mark. Now we have this acreage base. And, you know, I've talked to clients since March about, I think that the soybean acres are probably a little bit light right now based upon USDA's numbers, based upon what we have done the last 5 or 6 years. And so I've kind of had about 800 to 900,000 more acres of soybeans planted in my numbers all the way going back to March. So that's kind of what I'm on the hunt for going into the report.
One other note about this, the FSA numbers in August, many saw that and said, hey, this number is big and it means there's going to be more acreage. I don't know whether that you were among that crew or not. However, USDA says, we just collected a lot more data a lot sooner, so we're giving you this figure in September rather than October, and it's not really confirmation that we have bigger numbers, or at least not yet, just that it's coming out earlier.
I think both parties are right. I mean, I think the FSA numbers do suggest that we have bigger acreage base than what the USDA gave us back in March, which we're still working off of. But by the same token, I do think of the August WASD report, the amount of farmer surveys that they did versus relying upon just satellite imagery, for example, for their yield estimates and things like that. If they got all the information from producers' yield and acreage, I felt like that was a pretty big number for the month of August. So I think there's an argument to be made in both areas. I think that the bottom line point here is that them coming out and saying that they're going to revise it, they must have sensed exactly what you're talking about, that there is some distinction and maybe differences between the two agencies. They're going to get rectified, and that just opens up the Pandora's box for more volatility.
And one final thing, I know you watch outside markets pretty closely. The unemployment numbers have been dropping, they say this is because of the resurgence of COVID, especially in the Southeast. Does that worry you at all?
No. In fact, I'm going to put it to you this way, Todd, and you can do a follow-up if you need to, because it may not be make a lot of sense. But I think the Federal Reserve a week ago said that there's two things that we're going to do that we need to meet to be able to get to tapering and cutting back on our monetary policy: inflation, and they said we've met that need, and unemployment and jobs, and we're watching that. And so I think after Friday's number being so low compared to 725,000 estimated and coming in at, as you say, 235,000, the Fed doesn't need to really taper at all. And that became an inflationary mindset on Friday. That's, I think, our best bet to having the commodities find support through the crude oil and Hurricane Ida supply problems, and the dollar weakening on an inflationary bias. We noticed that silver at times were up between 3% and 4% on Friday, and the gold was also reacting very inflationary wise. And the dollar was able to make a new, I believe it was a 12-week low against the lowest point in the dollar against the offshore Chinese currency since mid-June occurred on Friday. These are good for commodities, so we'll see if that can't transfer into some more positive price action as the report approaches.
The interplay is always so interesting. Thank you for keeping track of it.
You bet, sir. Have a great weekend.
You too. That's Mike Zuzlow. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Up next, an interview I did during the Farm Progress Show with the head of the Office of Research at ACES.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the research that happens on campus at the University of Illinois in the College of Agricultural, Consumer, and Environmental Sciences. Herman Bolero is here. He heads up the Office of Research on campus. He's a professor and an associate dean. Thank you so much, Herman, for being with us. This is a big part of what happens within the College of ACES. We talk about it having three really vital programs: education, students, outreach, extension, what I'm involved in a lot of the time, and then the Office of Research, which you get to head up and see almost all of, I think. And I'm wondering how important and vital that has been over the last several years and how it has changed potentially.
Well, you know, we like to say that Illinois is the number one land-grant institution in the country because of our research. We're in a tremendous campus. Research across the campus is really among the best in the country. So we're within that environment. And in the College of ACES, it's been tremendous, the change of what we do in research, because we're broad. We're going from, you know, working in production agriculture to working agricon, animal agriculture, natural resources is very broad. And then food, right, which is where it comes down to the consumer, which is really important. So tremendous research in the area of nutrition, tremendous research in the area of food in general. So we're very proud of what we do. I think that this, if I look at this past year and the pandemic, and I look at our college, we never stop. You know, we have the highest year in terms of research funding coming to the college and research output out of the college. And again, that's what it gets me excited every day. The talent of the people that we hire, that ultimately is what it keeps this going, is tremendous. Our assistant professors and our grad students, postdocs, are doing a phenomenal job. So the future is great. There are a few clearly highlights of what we've done this past year. One of them is in the past few years we've been collaborating heavily with computer science and engineering. So we are trying to get a lot of partnerships with people that never thought of using agriculture as a domain, to bring them into agriculture and use their expertise into agriculture. And we, 3 years ago, we established a Center for Digital Agriculture. And again, that's very broad because it goes from production agriculture to economics to supply chains. And that's been tremendously successful into a lot of research being funded through that. One example of that is this past year we got an award from NSF and NIFA that is called AI Farm. Stands for Artificial Intelligence for the Future of the Way that We're Going to Grow Food in Agriculture. And that is a large award, $20 million over a five-year period, just that looks at incorporating digital technologies, artificial intelligence, into agriculture. That's tremendous for us, and it's giving us a lot of press. You know, it goes from robots again to inserting nanosensor into plants. So it's exciting from that point of view. Another highlight has been the on the soft side of what we do, on the broadness of what we do, is the Farmers Ranchers Mental Health Network. We lead that from Illinois. Two assistant professors, as I was saying, the talent of coming up the ranks is tremendous. Two assistant professors leading that, Josie Rudolphe, and Dr. Catterson leading this effort, in which is a very, very important of our industry, of our number one industry in Illinois, the mental health of our farmers. This includes all the North Central region, 12 states in the North Central region, and we're leading that in terms of programs to support the mental health of farmers. So, and from that, I have to say, I was just talking to someone from NREC, which is another very applied, very connected to what we do here today at the Farm Progress Show, that is connected to reducing the environmental impact of agriculture, reducing nutrient losses to our to water, and a lot of this is a wonderful partnership between the state and a nonprofit like NREC and our university, which got a lot of people in faculty in our college being funded by NREC in that area. So we're very, very excited about that too. So.
Think about all the projects that you've seen come through. And what I want to know is, not the highlight, which you've told me about, but which ones you looked at and you thought, oh, that's cool. That's just cool.
You know, the one that there's so many, I don't want to leave anyone out, but, you know, we are looking at nutritional aspects of avocado and nuts and how that affects, regardless of whether it's avocado or nuts, but the research is looking at how our gut microbiome changes because of the food we eat, right? And we have so much talent in the college looking at gut microbiome, human and animal gut microbiome. So, and how that influences our, you know, obviously nutrition, but also our health in general. So that's really something that is, you know, it brings me back to, you know, we grow crop for a reason, and, you know, we study other aspects of it, which is nutrition, which is such an important one. Another one, I would say, is also what we're doing in terms of fermentation and looking at how we deconstruct carbon chains down to something and that we can construct something else. And we have tremendous talent into looking at things like that. And a lot of grants and awards, a lot of research productivity in those areas.
Ramon Bolero is an associate dean in the Office of Research and a professor of agronomy on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
On this Friday afternoon, let's turn our attention to the weather forecast. We're joined by Eric Snodgrass. He's with Nutrien and Agrible. Thank you so much for being with us today. I hope you're looking forward to a great Labor Day weekend.
Oh, yeah. I'm actually going to take Monday off. So I'm gonna let the weather do its own thing, and I'm not going to even look at it for one day. just try to pull back and enjoy a nice weekend with my family.
Ooh, can we make a bet on that?
I will probably lose because I'm addicted and I should probably get counseling, but I'm sure I'll still look.
All right. I'm sure you will look. But what I want you to do first this afternoon is to look back at the month of August, because it seemed like a strange one to me.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is sometimes when we go back and historically process weather data to try to draw conclusions about how weather influenced a crop, we like to look at it based upon a calendar month, right? So we're like, oh, what happened in August of 19 or August of 2005 or whatever? And in reality, when we go back and look at August 2021, we need to remember that it was kind of a tale of two halves. The front half was substantially different than the latter half. I mean, in the last half of August, parts of the Western Corn Belt received between 12 and 20 inches of rain in some places. The front half, there was no rain and it was super hot in those areas. We then transitioned here to a really hot time period in the middle of the month toward the end. And now we're going to finish it on this, you know, really cool. I mean, it's actually beautiful outside today, even though we do have some rain coming, it's still, you know, quite nice. And so you're going to look back at August and think about it being a very critical month, of course, for soybeans and how corn is going to, you know, fill. But the reality of it is it was a month that finished way different than it started. And a lot of it had to do with heavy rains, not only in the Western Corn Belt, then, of course, with three tropical systems, Fred, Henri, and then the powerhouse of Ida.
Do we know, because when this happens once in a while, what it actually looks like in the month of August is normal, because one half was really hot and the other half was cooler, and one half was dry and the other half was wet.
Yeah. And you know what's funny is I was trying to explain this to somebody the other day. You know, I said, when you think about what an average weather day is, you have to remember that it's taking the average of a bunch of chaotic days, right? In fact, in any given year, now this is pretty crazy, but I used to teach this at the U of I, in any given year, the total number of days where the actual high temperature matches the average high temperature is usually less than 10. So there you go. You know, we use it as a baseline, but it's never there.
Wow. Okay. So yeah. Let's look forward then.
Okay.
Early harvest weather. What do we see in the next couple of weeks?
Well, I got some new data late last night, and I've spent a lot of time looking at it, and this is what I'm thinking about. So I'm going to go all the way out to September 15th. Let's just start there and go to October 15th. That's a critical time period for both us and South America, which I'm sure we'll talk about next. So here's the thing. What we keep seeing in the models is that they're trying to dry out parts of the southeastern United States. And why that's critical for us here in the I states is to do that there, there needs to be high pressure. And if there's higher atmospheric pressure in that area, sometimes what we can get out of that is what we call ring of fire precipitation patterns. Now, we don't like that, of course, during harvest, because that means we open the Gulf, the moisture flows around the big high over the southeast, which means it goes through Louisiana, Arkansas, Missouri, Illinois, and we can get this heavy rainfall events. It seems as though we're going to see that a couple of times in September. I don't see it lasting, and that's the good news. That means by the time we want this crop to dry down, we are going to have a better shot at having normal fall weather. I do also think that throughout that same 30-day time period, September 15 to October 15, we're going to favor warmer than normal conditions over the whole time. But remember, we're going to be averaging a whole lot of ups and downs because September is a transition month, right? We're moving toward fall, which means we have the fronts that knock the temperature back. And then, like we'll see next week, temperatures go back up into the low to mid 80s. So that's going to be the way of it as we progress forward toward harvest. But the good news is I didn't say anything there that was like shocking or alarming or look out, it's coming, you know, that kind of stuff. So I kind of like the way things are shaping up.
Hey, South America, you know, now they have third crop corn. It's not big enough for us to talk about. So at least we get some time off from the Southern Hemisphere, I think. But not long, because we need to start talking about it again as planting season is upon us shortly there.
That's right. I mean, planting season there starts in 12 days. There you get the green light to start planting in like Mato Grosso on September the 15th. And what we're seeing right now is that same time period is favoring drier conditions. And you and I have been talking about this. We knew that because this La Nina is trying to get its act together, because we have better rising motion over, you know, Australia and Indonesia and the Philippine Islands, that there's a better chance for South America to be drier. Plus, given the ocean temperature patterns, where the intertropical convergence zone, there's a new word we don't often use here, but its position, all of those things kind of indicate maybe a slower start to the planting season. Now, to say that it's going to be as slow as last year isn't really in the cards, though. But I do think we're going to have some delays early. But they're going to be very aggressive. And the question is, will they plant in less than ideal conditions just to get this crop in? Because we are expecting big acreage in South America this year. So I think it's all going to be a bit of a wild card at the start. And then remember, if we do go into, you know, a La Nina fall and winter for us, that'd be spring and summer for them, that could bring about regional drought issues, maybe something similar to what we saw last year.
Indeed. Hey, thank you. I will depend on you to keep an eye on that and, you know, to watch the weather every day of the year.
Okay. It's like you and the radio. You don't get a break from it either.
No, indeed. Hey, thank you. You have a great Labor Day weekend.
Thanks, you too.
It's Eric Snodgrass. He is with Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.